Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Fort Bragg's backyard, this is the show that put the 110 Nation on the map. There is only one nation, the 110 Nation, and you're listening to the 110 Nation Sports Show. Covering each and every sport across the board. There is no sport too large or too little. It's time to talk the talk. Here we go. Here's the man, the founder, and your host, Mr. CJ Sports.
Welcome, everybody, to the 110 Nation Sports Show. I am your host, Mr. CJ Sports. You can follow me at CJ Sports 1. You can follow me at Mr. CJ. I forgot to change that. You can follow me at Mr. CJ Sports. You can follow the 110 Nation at 110 Nation. Check us out on Facebook, my personal fan page, Mr. CJ Sports, the 110 Nation fan page, 110 Nation Sports. Also, check out our site, www.the110nationsports.com, for all the latest going on here at the 110 Nation. A lot of things going on here at the 110 Nation. We got our intern, Mike McGinnis, joining us tonight. If you've not been over the site and check out his... If you've not checked out his articles, his pieces over there, make sure you guys jump over there and check it out. He's got a lot of great things going on over there, so make sure you guys do that. Want to make sure that I thank Carolina Sports Plus and Fit for Life. Without these great marketing partners, we wouldn't be able to do what we do or grow the way we grow. Great relationship with these different marketing partners, and want to make sure that I thank them. You guys can find both of them, Carolina Sports Plus and Fit for Life, on Facebook. Still working, trying to figure out how the banners got pulled off the site. Because once upon a time, all you had to do was just go over to our site, click the banner, and it would take you where you needed to go for them. So we're working on getting that fixed and making it as easy as possible for you guys to show support for our marketing partner. We got Mike joining us at, well, I was going to say 30, but we're just getting things rolling. But we got Mike joining us here in the next 2 or 3 minutes. I'll call him to give me a couple minutes, and we'll get him into the studio. Got a lot of things to cover with Mike. And then we got Izzo, our very own NHL expert, joining us here at 9:30. And we got a lot of things on the ice to get caught up on as well. So looking forward to that. Apologize not last night. When no show, things have just been so crazy, hectic, hectic at work. We've had in the last week, 3 store managers chuck up the deuces. One of them on to bigger and better things, becoming, we call them market managers, but most other companies, district manager, a trainee. And then another one, I think it had to do with marital affairs and kind of just needed to get away. I don't know the details. details, just like the third one. I don't, excuse me, know the details other than the the fact that they used to, once upon a time, be into hardcore stuff that never a good thing, and so thoughts and prayers with her if that is the case, and hopefully that is not the case. But been hectic. You throw three store managers trucking up the deuces, already being shorthanded, and then you add the fact that already shorthanded, now we got to help other stores because they're shorthanded without managers. And then, of course, for those that don't know my personal stuff on that, I went, this is the summer of first, and gone back to working for the very first company that I worked for in North Carolina full-time. Well, I'm not saying full-time. Basically full-time hours, almost, 30, 40 hours in the weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday night, or Sunday all day long. Went straight for the world. I love slapping out pies, making New York-style pizza, something I've done for 10, 12 years. And so in my adventure to potentially move back to the great state of Ohio, I got to work on personal things, getting things situated, take care of bills and all that. So just been hectic, crazy here at the 110 Nation. Hopefully we get things situated. Like I said, working on trying to figure out why the banners on the sites are not, why they're not there no more. Hopefully we get back into having a regular routine. Mike and myself, we have an opportunity to sit down and maybe work on trying to get us on at least one of the nights on a regular basis, as there's a lot of things sports-wise that we need to be getting covered every week, and obviously having somebody there to have hold me accountable is always a good thing, so we'll see. But just a lot of things going on, and throwing life, and you throw in all these other things, and it makes it hectic. Looking forward to 1 week from today. I will be boarding plane out of RGU and heading to the great state of Ohio. Matter of fact, as soon as I get into Dayton International Airport, it's straight off to Kings Island. Military is free for the 3rd, 4th, and 5th. Prior, current, all forms of military, so get an opportunity to do that Thursday, get to spend time with my mommy and my girl and her kids and everything else, as Kings Island would be with my girl and her kids. Friday, we're going to go do the Columbus Zoo thing, and Saturday, of course, a buddy of mine graduated with, went ahead and bought a Cincinnati Red Cleveland Indian ticket. This will be my first Cleveland Indians game. So, of course, we'll have a lot to talk about when I come back. And like I was telling Miss Lee, being gone for 5 days and all the hecticness going on here, plus, unfortunately, being in a store that I have no service, they're supposed to be working on making the service better. It seems like the service keeps getting worse. My assistant was just talking about this the other day, talking about I try to stick because her mom called me, wanting to make sure everything was all right because I ain't heard from her in a couple of days. And she's like, I've sent her messages. It's gotten to the point where you send messages like if they don't go out and they're just constantly with the circle thing that it does and say sending and never sends out. So I'm trying to be more active with the fan page. And once upon a time, it was easier because I could spend part of the day just sharing stuff and everything else on Facebook. Now I'm in a location that's kind of a dead zone where it's hard for me to share anything. And then, true story, and then I get Mike in the studio here. The last two nights I've gotten home. Well, Friday night, the heat and everything got to me to the point that it was like the exorcist. I was like the exorcist. It was horrible. I felt bad. I hope I cleaned the bathroom good. Like, it was bad. It was real bad. But the last two nights, I was actually, I was asked if I was ignoring the significant other because I wasn't responding to anything. And we're just prime example, yesterday's meeting was supposed to be a 12 to 3, 3-hour meeting that I wasn't already thrilled about. And there's a reason why I like my job and I hate being in the office is I sit around, I'm going to get tired, and it's going to be tough to stay awake. My job, I stay active, I go, go, go. I don't have to worry about that, and that's great about it. You know, some days you wish you could have a breather and be able to sit down. Yeah, but 9.9 out of 10 times, I'd just rather be go, go, go. That way, I just who I am. And she kept asking me if I'm ignoring her, and what it was is where I'm so stretched out, like I would try to send a message and a text message or whatever, and I would next thing I know I'd be waking up and it's a bunch of gibberish where I fell asleep, and I'm just fingers just kind of fell across a bunch of different buttons, and it was making symbols that I didn't even know you can make, and it was not making any sense. And so I would delete the whole message, start back over, and get partway through that message and fall asleep, and then it would be the whole process all over again. It got to the point, because I kept having to hear, are you ignoring me, you're not going to talk to me, that I just started sending the gibberish so she would understand exactly what I was talking about. Working on trying to get everything situated so I can assist Mike, who's doing a phenomenal job for us, more in getting articles out and sharing stuff. And with the guys tomorrow night right here on the Once in Nation Sports Radio Network, Race Chat Live with Craig and Chris, do a phenomenal job. Had an opportunity to hang out with them in the studio last week. Looking forward to catching up with the guys and talking about Sonoma this week, tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, so make sure you guys tune in. But anyway, we got a lot of things that have gone on over the last week in other than NHL, because, of course, we got Izzo joining us at 9:30 to talk NHL. A lot of trades, a lot of we have the NBA draft. We have a lot of interesting things as I was catching up on some First Take First. And what the Lakers are doing, and even the potential return of J.R. Smith with LeBron James. I hope they put signs up and make sure he knows which direction to go. I'm not just playing. But anyway, I just took enough time up, and we got a lot of things to jump into. So without any further delay, let's go ahead and get Mike in the studio. Mike, how you doing tonight?
Not too bad, man. How are you?
Not too bad. As long as I keep these eyelids open, we're going to be doing good tonight. So we got a lot of things to talk about, and we got a lot of exciting things going on in the sports world. So I think we'll be all right tonight.
Yeah, I mean, we just had the draft, and on Sunday night at 6 p.m., that's when free agents are officially allowed to start negotiating contracts. They can't be approved and official until July 6th. So we'll have about 6 days of negotiations and rumors until those contracts are signed. And we'll find out where all these big names are supposedly going. But the draft.
Always an interesting time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the crazy thing about the NBA. I mean, people get pumped about NFL free agency, but NBA blows it away by, 10 miles. It really does.
You got all those what ifs. It was, what, a year ago, 2 years ago? God, what player was it? We were all for sure. God, I'm trying to think of who
I can picture who it was.
For sure. Are you talking Paul George?
No, it wasn't Paul George. It was somebody who was supposed to go to a team, and the last second they said, you know what, I'm staying put. I think it had to do with
DeAndre Jordan.
Yes. So we never know as for sure as we think we know what we know and hear what we hear. And that's kind of what's interesting about how the free agency works. Like, you're allowed to talk and you're allowed to kind of put out there the information, but you're not allowed to sign until that time. So there's always that last second, well, you know, I'm going to go ahead and pull the okey-doke, and this is not what's going to happen. This is actually what's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, you look at what DeAndre Jordan did. He had that deal with Mark Cuban down in Dallas and then pulled it back at the last second. But even then, you look at Paul George, who was supposed to head to L.A., you know, either the Clippers or the Lakers, and then he didn't even take a meeting with anybody. He just signed his deal in Oklahoma City to stay put after the trade. So, I mean, you really don't know what's going to happen because of the way the tampering rules in the NBA work. Players are not allowed to talk to teams, and teams aren't allowed to talk to players, but the players are allowed to talk amongst themselves. So, you know, that's why you see a lot of the rumors with KD, even though he's injured, heading off to Brooklyn with Kyrie Irving. Or, I mean, heck, even DeAndre Jordan right now, who played last season with the Knicks, you know, he's being talked about as packing up his bags and heading to Brooklyn with KD and Kyrie. So, I mean, these players talk all day long, but until, you know, that official negotiation period opens, you know, and this year it's on Sunday, you know, we really don't know where anybody's going to go. But I think the way the draft kind of played out, you're going to see where a lot of these big name dominoes are going to fall. Maybe not to the point where we know what team, but we know that they're going to be gone because a lot of teams essentially retooled through the draft this year. When I wrote that in the article, 60 picks and 28 of them were traded, you know, that night as part of trades that were lined up in the hours before the draft. You know, so almost half those players drafted by whatever team are going to be on the move, you know, starting on the 6th of July when those trades are made official.
Well, let's, before we jump into draft and trade rumors, we have a champion. We have Toronto. We've not talked much since the season came to an end. One, congratulations to Toronto, as we got to watch the NBA and NHL have first-time winners in each of their respectable sports. So congratulations to them. And you and I have had this conversation, I'm not a Golden State fan, being a Cleveland fan, and it's nothing against them, but one, in all fairness, I just like 29 teams. I'm a Cavalier that is just like in the NFL. I hate 31 teams. It's just the Browns. So it's not nothing personal per se. But for some reason, I was not excited about it being Toronto. I don't know why. I found myself cheering for Golden State more of because of the situation. I was kind of intrigued to see if Steph Curry could do this kind of on his own with all the injuries, because that's kind of what it came down to. KD came back, and we're going to talk about how this is going to affect his value here in a second, but you know, KD kind of had to come back, and I know a lot of people questioned, criticized, but you didn't know. You didn't know if that was it. You know, you kind of had to be all in. It was an elimination game. Then Klay Thompson being injured, and there was just a lot of things that stacked up against Golden State that even though I have my ill feelings towards Golden State because of the whole them Cleveland rivalry, I kind of wanted to see them pull things out and I don't know. I just wasn't all in on the whole Toronto thing. But the last few games, I think we did talk about this through Messenger. The last few games were definitely interesting games. The final series and Toronto being champions, your thoughts, your opinions. Then I'll kind of want to lead that into talking about this injury and how do you feel it's going to affect the value of KD and what this may or may not do for Kevin Durant going into free agency.
Well, I mean, Toronto, they played the Warriors game better than the Warriors did. And those first three finals that the Warriors played in, they had great bench depth. You know, they were able to bring guys off the bench. You know, Iguodala won, you know, that first year they won, he was the, he was the finals MVP as a sixth man. You know, and then they had guys like David West, you know, Andrew Bogut, that, you know, the first time he was in Golden State. You know, and they managed to find players in the second round or vets that took, you know, the mid-level exemption or less to kind of win, you know, win rings. But they had great bench depth. And this season, they didn't have it. Golden State was a very top-heavy team, you know, especially once Boogie came back after the All-Star break. You know, you had Draymond, Steph, Klay, and KD, and that's how the Golden State Warriors were going to get you this year. But it showed how important that bench depth was, you know, when KD goes out for, a month and a half. And, you know, when Klay, even when he missed game three with the calf contusion, you know, it really cemented home how important the bench was, because that's where Toronto really put it on Golden State. I mean, Kawhi had maybe the best finals that we've seen overall from one player. The guy was, you know, stealing the ball, pulling down rebounds, hitting, you know, clutch shots, making, you know, tough points in the paint. The guy did it all. But, you know, Pascal Siakam, before the season, did you ever hear of him? No. You know, but he, you know, game six and seven, he put up, you know, 15 points and 10 rebounds. You know, Serge Ibaka came in big off the bench in game six with like 21 points, I think, off the top of my head, and 10 rebounds. And then you had Fred VanVleet, who, especially in game seven, was just drilling shots from all over the court. You know, and Toronto was a team that there wasn't one lottery pick on that team, and they won the title. You know, so Toronto really just played the Warriors game better than the Warriors did, know, and KD's a game changer. You know, I don't think we can say anything other than that about KD, but the fact of the matter is I don't think even having him at 100% would have really changed the course of the series. You know, it went seven games, but Toronto just outplayed Golden State in almost every facet of the game. And, you know, they leaned on their bench. You know, Toronto was not a top-heavy team. They got everybody involved that they could, you know, minus, I think, they out of a 15-man roster, they played 12. You know, Jeremy Lin got him a ring, but he didn't play any minutes the entire finals. So,
but, I love that meme. I don't know if you saw that meme where it actually had a picture of Carmelo Anthony and talking about, people said he wouldn't do this, and people said this. Then he got him a ring, and then you realize in the background there's Jeremy Lin, and that's actually who they're talking about, not Carmelo Anthony. I fell out when I seen that.
That's awesome. That is great. Katie. I mean, that's you have to give a lot of credit to Masai Ujiri. You know, the general manager to the Raptors, he found players, in the second round that really kind of put in good minutes, you know, gave a lot of contributions to the team, bringing Serge Ibaka from Oklahoma City, swinging that trade midseason for Marc Gasol. I mean, Masai Ujiri might be the best, you know, general manager in the NBA right now. You know, so Toronto's one of those teams that's just stacked from the top down.
Yeah. It's been interesting to see how this offseason plays. As, you know, we have talked amongst ourselves about the rumors of Kawhi and property and what he's going to do. But before we get into that, obviously, you know, there's a lot of what ifs, and we don't know what if KD would have been 100%, would things been differently. We don't know when, you know, you've done, you know, kind of laid it out there and you don't think it would have made too much of a difference, or, you know, we would have got the same results. And I feel the way that the teams were loaded this year, and put together, I'm not going to say loaded, but put together this year, I can agree with what you said. But this also leads to this offseason, and, you know, up until this point, it was all about KD and New York and, you know, the potential of Kyrie, but what the plans were, and was KD going to be able to help bring a championship back to New York and everything else. Now you're talking about KD with a pretty significant injury. Does this change anything? Does this one change New York's approach? Does this change the opinions of those that once upon a time, I'm going to go play with KD and help put New York back on the map and we're going to win championships? Does this change anything in your opinion, or more so, how significantly, obviously it's going to change, how significantly, there we go, does this change things for New York and KD?
Well, for KD, I mean, when you get down to it, he's going to get his money. Even with an injury this big, it's not so far, every report says that it's not scaring suitors away. They realize that they're going to lose a year out of the deal. But that's still not going to deter teams from going out and pitching him, you know, when the meetings start. I mean, McMenamin and Brian Windhorst, you know, guys as Cavs fans that we essentially saw follow LeBron around for 4 years. You know, Windhorst came out and said that the Warriors are looking at offering KD the max, the super max that they're allowed to offer him, which is 5 years and $221 million. But it would essentially be like a sign and trade. They would let him sit the year out, rest and rehab, you know, get the clearance to play, and then they would move him to a team of his choosing. But the issue with that is, since this isn't going to be like a traditional sign and trade where, you know, KD on, in this case, July 6th would put pen to paper, and then he's immediately shipped to his new team, he's going to spend a year in Golden State rehabbing. That's going to be problematic because, you know, 5 years, $220 million, you're looking at almost $41 million a season. You have to make the salaries match at that point. You know, that's one of those odd salary cap rules the NBA has. You know, for in-season trades, you have to make the salaries match. And I don't know any team that's going to be able to send talent coupled with picks to Golden State to match $41 million. So I don't know how likely that is. I think Golden State's front office is smart enough to where if that's an option, they'll do it. And it also has kind of given KD that financial security and the fact that Golden State does have some of the best – you know, medical staff and rehabilitation staff in the league, you know, he'll be able to get back up to snuff. But with that being said, you know, I really think the Knicks and the Nets are going to go hard after KD, you know, the minute 6:01 hits on Sunday night. You know, I don't really think that is even going to – the injury is going to deter either of those two teams. I think, you know, the Knicks, they've spent, what, the last 30 years as a dumpster fire. They've got new people in the front office. They got David Fitzdale, who's the head coach. So there's a little more continuity there. Things have kind of calmed down. But still, you know, New York has some good young players. I really like Kevin Knox. He's a forward. But the thing is, you know, the Knicks are going to have to ship out Frank Ntilikina, who was their first-round pick last year, you know, and a couple other players to clear cap space to bring in KD and another star. You know, that space still is not cleared. Brooklyn's kind of in the same boat. They've got a little more financial leeway because if they completely just do not tender D'Angelo Russell, that opens up a whole other max cap spot. I mean, it's going to come down to the New York teams to pick up KD. You know, there's going to be other teams like the Clippers, I think, will probably give him a buzz, like try and set up a meeting. But I just, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. And we've heard KD to New York for, what, a year, essentially. So, you know, you have that. But the minute KD signs, and if it's true that he's a package deal with Kyrie, you're going to see a couple other dominoes fall because Kyrie is a shooting first point guard. You know, so whoever gets Kyrie, you know, the teams that are looking for, you know, that were in the running for Kyrie and didn't get him, that's, you're going to see like D'Angelo Russell go out and sign that deal or Kimball Walker go out and kind of take that. So like that'll be the first domino, and you'll probably see a lot of those shoot first point guards that are on the market sign after him. You know, they're going to let Kyrie kind of set the market and then go into it. But I mean, it's the biggest kicker is going to be what the Lakers do, because that Anthony Davis trade, because it is the NBA, it's a little more complicated than people think. You know, everybody's like, hey man, the Lakers got the money, they're going to go out and get this third star. But the problem is, if in the the trade agreement, if that trade goes down after July 30th, that's going to give the Lakers more money to spend on a third star. Okay, and it has to do with how the money comes off the books from the Pelicans to the Lakers. All right, and they'll have $4 million extra dollars if Anthony Davis waives a trade bonus. So, like in his contract, he said if I get traded at any time during my contract, you know, my gaming team has to give me $4 million. And then he has the opportunity to waive it, but he also came out and said, I'm not waiving it, I want my $4 million. So that's $4 million bucks less that the Lakers are going to have. So with that being said, they're going to have to move. Because the Lakers only have six people under contract right now. Okay, right now. They only have six players under contract. So it's like LeBron James, AD, Kyle Kuzma, Morris Wagner, and like two other bench guys. So in order for them to clear another max spot, like guys like Wagner and the two other bench players are going to have to be moved, because you're going to need at least $33 million more to give to another max guy. And then they'll have about roughly $8 million to flesh out the 12 other players to play on that team next to those big three.
Lakers, that was also another big hot topic, and obviously interesting. AD goes to the Lakers, as you talk about, and that gives you Kuzma, Anthony Davis, LeBron James. The next piece is kind of a variable. We don't know right now with Walker or Russell possibly returning. The potential of Kyrie Irving, obviously, I think most people agree D'Angelo Russell would be the best fit, speaking of financially and the relationship that he has already with LeBron James. The exit plan the first time wasn't the greatest, but you know, that is what that is. And then possibly bringing the band back together with talks of possibly Kyle Korver, J.R. Smith coming. This Lakers team, one, with the West kind of being what it is right now with the uncertainties with KD and Golden State, and the players that Lakers have already gotten, and the potential of what is out there to put the pieces together, because we know that these pieces work together. We've seen it in Cleveland. One, we've not talked much about the trade itself. And at first, I was sitting there thinking to myself, God, Lakers gave up like everything to get AD. But then you really think about it, you didn't really give up much. You got rid of Ball, who was injured prone, and I don't know. To me, I still don't get what was all about that. But then you got rid of Ingram, good player, but he's got his medical issues that are pretty severe, and so you didn't really lose much there. You did lose Hart, and it seemed like it was one other piece that wasn't that big of a deal that they lost. Now, you lost some valuable draft picks, but when it's all said and done, I don't feel that the Lakers really gave up as much as it originally sounded, at least to me. Your thoughts on what the Lakers gave up, what they got, and best-case scenario for the Lakers with the potential of Smith, the potential of Korver, the potential of either Ambiid, Walker, Irving, or Russell. Your opinions, what Lakers should do, and are we talking about a Lakers team that a couple weeks ago we were looking at, they have two good players, and that was really it, to, I don't know, I this team to me, I'm not going to say the championship contender, but they're at least playoff contenders at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of people that kind of got on me because I wrote about it on the website. Ball is going to be a defense pass first point guard, and the thing is that is something that you could go to the Hall of Fame with. You know, Jason Kidd did it. That dude, his first 10 years in the league, he couldn't hit a shot, you know, outside of 15 feet. He eventually developed a nice, you know, a decent outside stroke, you know, but he was, that's what he did. He was more of a glue guy. And the thing is, was Lonzo Ball worth it at number two? No. But you look at where he ended up in LA, you know, the spotlight's on him. You got Magic Johnson, you know, and then as well as his father sitting there in the press, you know, I think New Orleans is a good spot for Lonzo Ball to go to. Especially how the team's constructed now. He doesn't have to go out there and score 25 points a game. He could be the guy that gets you 10 or 11. He's going to get you 5 to 6 rebounds. He's going to get you 7 to 8 assists, a couple steals, and he can guard every position from the 1 to 4. And, you know, that's very important now in the NBA, you know, where you have to be able to guard multiple positions. And then Ingram, yeah, he's had a couple injury issues. But the thing is, that's another first-round pick. You know, essentially in this trade, 5 first-round picks got exchanged for one player. That is problematic right there because you and I both know, I mean, look at what the Cavs are dealing with right now because we have literally sent out first-round picks every year for about 5 years. You know, it's important to keep those picks even at the low – you know, at the low end, because that's how you rebuild bench depth. You have to have them. The Lakers gave up a lot of that potential young, energetic bench depth to go out. And, yeah, you and I are always going to have a soft spot in our heart for Kyle Korver and J.R. Smith. They got the Cavs the title, you know, I'm always going to be appreciative of that. But Korver's going to be 38. J.R. Smith hasn't played basketball in a year. You know, and shooting is one of those things that you could do until your 40s. But with the way the NBA is now, you have to be able to shift and move. You know, it's about tempo. It's about transition. It's about spacing. Older players are going to have problems with that. You know, we saw it that last year LeBron was in Cleveland. Korver couldn't move. You know, if it was basketball circa the Jordan years, we would just stick Korver on the wing and let him stand there outside the three-point line until somebody dumped the ball off to him. He doesn't transition off his man well. He doesn't even really rebound that well anymore. You know, so, I mean, that's – it's it's essentially what has driven Carmelo Anthony from being one of those guys we talked about is all NBA, all everything, to, well, Melo didn't play defense that well in the first place, but his scoring and rebounding made up for it. And now, you know, you look at those 12, 13 games he played in Houston, it just showed he can't keep up in today's NBA. You know, and the thing is with the Lakers, you've got probably the best player LeBron's ever played with, and Anthony Davis coming to Los Angeles. You know, he's a guy that's got a great, you know, for his size, he's got a great outside stroke, great interior game. You know, it's going to be crazy watching LeBron dumping the ball off to him in the paint. And Davis, you know, he passes well out of the low block. So you got two great players, but the fact of the matter is if they go out and sign another max player, you are going to have a bunch of older veterans that are going to take the veterans minimum or take that mid-level exemption to go and play for the Lakers. And then you're probably going to see a lot of G League guys, you know, towards the end of the bench throughout the roster, because there's just not going to be any money to do it, you know, to fill out, you know, 15-man roster, let alone eight guys that you're going to play consistently, you know. So, I mean, I think that, you know, if the Lakers go out and sign a third big name, you know, whether it's Kyrie or D'Angelo Russell or Kemba, you know, it's going to be one of those top-heavy teams that is, you know, that is going to go be a four seed, a three seed, maybe even a two seed. You know, who knows? Like you said, the West is in flux next year. So, like, teams like the Rockets, teams like Portland, teams like the Clippers, get in now. Do it now, you know, because I really don't think Klay's leaving Golden State. You know, Klay, he's not going to leave. I don't think he's going to leave. He's going to rehab all next year. But, you know, Draymond, Steph Curry, and a Klay Thompson-led Golden State team, that's actually a really good team, man. And, you know, and they've done it before KD got there. So, I mean, next year is that's the year to go after it. But, I mean, I just don't see the Lakers making hay after, say, the first round where your bench depth matters more. Especially when you've got so much salary tied up in three players. You know, it's just – I just don't see them being able to flesh out a deep bench or even a functional bench because, you know – of the first-round picks they sent out in addition to the one they sent out this year, you know. So they still have two more first-round picks that they have to give to New Orleans. So, I mean, I just don't see them making a big dent in the West. You know, Portland's a good team. You still got Golden State there. You still got Houston. You got the Clippers. There's probably going to be listeners that give me a hard time, but – you know, Sacramento's up and coming. So, you know, like the West is, you know, it's not going to be as easy as people think next year.
Now, Houston was pursuing somebody, and I just had this conversation. I can't remember. Chris Paul, James Harden, who was the third person? They are trying to create their big three. And for the life of me, I can't think of who the third person was. Do you know who the third person is that they're trying to create a big three with right now?
Well, right now they're trying to clear space for Jimmy Butler.
That's right.
I don't know. I don't even know how you make that work. You know, Houston plays small ball, but, like, where are you going to put Butler at the three? You know, like, If they moved Chris Paul, I can see that. I think that makes more sense. Especially, you know, earlier, you know, 3 weeks ago, we heard that Chris Paul and James Harden weren't speaking. They were getting arguments on the sideline. They were getting arguments in the locker room. And then Chris Paul comes out and is like, yo, man, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, I love James Harden. We're best friends or whatever, you know. And it's just like, okay. But, like, I don't know how you package, you know. I have no idea how
Butler's happy anywhere, though. I mean, it seems like no matter where Jimmy Butler goes, he's not happy. Like, can he be happy there if that even is feasible?
I don't think so, because let's face it, you know, he complained about being in Chicago because he wasn't the man, right? He wasn't getting enough touches. They move him to Minnesota to a coach he's familiar with. you know, to the coach that essentially let him do whatever he wanted to on offense and Thibodeau, well, he didn't like it there either, and Thibodeau lost his job for it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He gets to Philly where he's playing against, you know, with Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons and J.J. Redick, you know. That Philly team that was actually really good and is super young, and that like this is something you can build on and grow. You know, like the process worked. You know, give Sam Hinkie all the credit for that one. You know, and then he still wasn't happy there. You know, and I'm just like, dude, you know, Ben Simmons is the one. You're the two. You know, let Simmons do his job, which is to carry the ball up, get it into Butler or Embiid, and then crash the boards, get the rebounds, because God forbid if Ben Simmons takes a shot outside of 12 feet, you don't want it, you know? So, like, you have ample opportunity to hit those wide-open shots. Because, I mean, Simmons is he's a good slasher, and he's got all that length, you know, a 6'10 point guard. That's nuts, man. But, you know, Butler just doesn't seem to be happy anywhere. And can you imagine him in Houston playing next to a ball-dominant point guard in Chris Paul and then a ball-dominant shooting guard in James Harden?
Yeah.
You know, I can see Jimmy Butler on the sidelines like four-year-old throwing a fit in, you know, a toy store because he was told no. You know, it's just it's crazy to me. You know, but I mean, and what kills me is even though, you know, just to talk about the Rockets for another second, they're in salary cap hell right now.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they don't have any room. So they would have to ship out, you know, damn near everything to make the money work. But then where's that leave Houston? Another top-heavy team, scraping the G League and veterans that maybe got cut during the summer or going into the season that just need they need to flesh out their bench. And it just, you know, like I said, Golden State showed us this year, bench depth is everything. If you don't have it, you're not going to be successful. And, teams are starting to realize that, you know, they're really starting to realize that. And, you know, that's where, you know, a lot of, maybe you're more casual fans, and I don't like to use that term because, you know, being a fan is being a fan. But, you know, they don't realize how important the bench is to sustain success in the NBA.
Yeah. Kawhi. You know, going into the year, there's kind of the Paul George scenario all over again. You know, everybody was for sure that Paul George 1 year in OKC, and that was it. He was going out west, and then he decided, you know what, I like where I'm at. I like the atmosphere. I'm going to stay. Didn't really get much out of Kawhi until we get to the end of the year, and you start hearing potentially that he's looking at property to stay in Toronto, and then you win a championship. I don't know if you can walk away from a championship team to go anywhere else. I mean, obviously you can, but it's hard for me to believe that, you know, we won a championship, we're a good team, but I still want to go play out west, so I'm going to leave. Like, I just can't see that making sense. To me, that's like the whole KD thing. You ride it until the ride's over with. Like, now, KD, you have a legitimate reason to go ahead and walk away from Golden State. It ended. If Golden State won a championship again this year, then I can't see you going play for New York. Why do you get off this ride when it's still – it's like being in the middle of riding the beast at Kings Island. Like, you can't be in that big circle doing 80 miles an hour and saying, you know what, it's time to get off. No, you finish riding this ride until it's time for them to until it's time for you to get off this ride. Then you get off. Kawhi, did things change? Does Kawhi go ahead and stay at least for another year? Or are we going to see him make that move out west that we've been hearing about for 2 or 3 years that he refused to keep playing for San Antonio? And I know that's not the whole reason, but, you know, that was part of why things played out the way they did. And we watched Toronto gamble on a man that they knew potentially was only going to be there for 1 year. Obviously, even if this is it, you won. Like, you got a championship. It don't matter. At this point, it don't matter what his decision is. Toronto won. But does Kawhi stay? Does he go out west? What does Kawhi do at this point?
Well, I mean, I agree with you there. Like, I think it's going to be tough for him to leave. And, you know, even going back to him, you know, when the trade was first announced, I think, you know, Toronto picked him up. You know, everybody, you know, all the bigwigs in NBA press are saying, you know, he's going to go to L.A. You know, he's from Southern California. You know, and they've also said he has no interest in playing with LeBron James. So if he goes to L.A., he's going to go play for the Clippers. But after winning a title, you know, you can't just get up and go. And a lot of reports coming out of there now are, you know, before the season started, it was the Clippers and we'll see what happens. And then once that, you know, he gets the Larry O'Brien trophy and he's going down the middle of Toronto, you know, with people tossing him cans of Bud Light, and he's just sitting there crushing them, you know, on the floats. You know, everything's saying that it's Toronto and then the Clippers, and then that's essentially it. It's a two-horse game at this point. But, I mean, although the Clippers are very well run, you know, Jerry West is the head of that front office, and they've got some good young players, and they've got salary cap space, and, you know, the Clippers are, you know, that's a good team that wasn't supposed to do anything this season, you know? Toronto's just a better team right now. And they've got a lot of decisions coming up, you know, about who is going to get a raise. You know, typical, you know, my team just won a championship thing. You know, people are going to get paid. But,
yeah,
you know, Kawhi, he's just a dude who's always marched to the beat of his own drum, you know. And I really could see him doing just like Paul George did. But the funny thing is, if he signs a max deal right now, or, you know, starting, you know, make it official July 6th with the Raptors, he doesn't have 10 years of service time. So his max is like 5 years, $190 million, because he made an All-NBA team, okay? At 10-year service time, if he signs a max deal, the 5 years, it's $220 million. So he could essentially sign a one-year deal, you know, like a one-year with a player option, you know, like LeBron did in Cleveland the second time around, and wait to hit his 10 years in the league, and that's going to net him an extra $40 million of pay. So,
wow.
And Toronto would be the only team, yeah, Toronto would be the only team that can offer him 5 years, 220. If he went to another team, it's like 4 years and like 190. If he goes to another team this year, you know, in this off season, it's 4 years and like 170, I believe. So, you know, I could see him signing in the 5 year deal in Toronto just to have that kind of stability. That guy's going to be royalty in Toronto forever. You know, he got a title there, you know, especially in a year where Toronto wasn't supposed to win a title. You know, so, I mean, he could sign the 5 year deal for $190 million just to have that stability because it is Kawhi Leonard. You know, or he could sign the 1 year deal under the max, which I think is like $32 million. And then next offseason, he signs that 5 year deal for $220 or $230 million. So, I mean, he can literally just go out and get paid at this point. You know, but you and I read a lot of stuff about legacy. But, the fact of the matter is, you know, your legacy is going to be built winning the Clippers a championship. You know, he got one at Toronto. He could have literally he could be the, you know, you've seen the meme, the king of the North. Like, he could be the king of the East for the next 4 or 5 years. You know, the way LeBron did it between Miami and Cleveland. Because it's just a good team, and they got a smart front office. And they draft well, and they know how to stash picks in Europe until they're ready, and then they bring them over. You know, so, I mean, I would – if it were me, I'd rather go play in Toronto. You know, one, Toronto's just a really cool city. So it's not L.A., but, you know what, you still get, like, that big city life. and you've already won a title. You know, short of you doing something horribly wrong, you're going to be royalty there the entire time you're there. You know, so, I mean, I don't see him leaving. I think it's hard. It's, like you said, it would be hard to leave after winning a Larry O'Brien trophy. You know, I can't see it.
I want to dab in a little bit of the draft, kind of touch at least on the Zion Williams getting selected by the Pelicans, I think, and I've caught a lot of talk. I think that New Orleans has done a great job on how they've handling this and maybe pulling some of the pressure off of Zion and what they're doing in New Orleans. This could be a good thing for them. Before we get Izzo in the studio, if you want to hang around and talk some hockey, I'm sure Izzo would love to have somebody that actually is knowledgeable when it comes to hockey. That's your choice. I don't know what your time frame is looking like here, but I know Izzo's going to be joining us here in a second to talk about the NHL and their drafting offseason as well. Norman, obviously, took advantage of the opportunity of getting one of the most hyped and talked about and expected to be one of the best players to come out in a long time. Your thoughts on New Orleans and them getting Williamson and where they go from here?
Well, I really thought New Orleans probably set themselves up best in the draft. In my write-up of the draft, I wrote Jackson Hayes, which was a center they took from Texas. I thought that was a bit of a stretch from where they took him. But he's one of those high-energy guys. He's going to be able to get you offensive rebounds. You know, he's going to be able to, you know, a lot of energy, shot blocking. But I didn't quite understand pulling a big five like that when you have Zion. Because if Hayes doesn't develop an offensive game, he's going to be 2 inches taller Tristan Thompson. You know, like, and you and I both know that you can't pay a guy like that, you know?
No.
So I wondered about that. But overall, that team got so much better, and they still have money to go out and get a shooter. You know, maybe they re-sign Julius Randle. You know, it really is going to depend how those first few big name dominoes fall out and what those salaries look like. But the Pelicans really just completely retooled their entire roster, essentially in one night. You know, between the trade and then actually drafting those players. So, I was really impressed with their entire draft. And then you have Zion Williamson, who's going to be, you know, this otherworldly, you know, player. And the thing is, he's not a Kyrie, and he's not, you know, one of those guys that only played a half year of college basketball, you know, and only played like the non-conference schedule. He played the entire season, you know, minus that injury he had because his shoe exploded. But he balled out against all comers. You know, I don't really remember him having a bad game.
No.
He might have had a bad game for him, but for us as fans watching him on TV or live, we never really saw him have a bad game. And I really just think it's because he's one of those guys that works hard at his craft. And, you know, the big knock on him was he doesn't have a consistent outside shot. No, he doesn't have it yet. You know, like that is something that at his size doesn't exactly come naturally to a lot of players. So give him time to work at it, and he develops that outside shot, dude. That's going to be nuts to watch him play.
Most definitely. And I don't think that'll ever get old to hear someone say he blew out his shoe, like literally blew out his shoe.
Yeah.
I don't think we'll...
that's what killed me. I don't know if you saw, but like Nike shares dropped by like 6% overnight after that game.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's
Oh, Lord. Got Izzo in the studio. I'm going to throw him in here. I don't know your time issue, if you want to hang out and talk NHL. Do you want to hang around?
Definitely.
Okay. I'm gonna get Izzo in the studio. I'm probably gonna take a step back because I think you and Izzo will kind of you guys will be able to mingle a lot better than and there's a lot of nights I feel bad. Like I love Izzo to death and I know Izzo's listening and I try my hardest and I've become so much more knowledgeable ever since Izzo's been part of the 110 Nation show, but I only know so much. I try my hardest. There's only so many hours in the day, and you were listening before I got you in the studio, and we talked earlier, and you know what my schedule has been like and the craziness. So even trying to keep up with the few sports that I have been able to keep up has been a task that I have, not alone trying to keep up with the other sports that I don't normally keep up. But let me get Izzo into the studio, give you guys a kind of an opportunity to kind of get it acquainted a little bit there and let you guys go to town for the next 30 minutes on some off-season hockey and your guys' thoughts and opinions and everything else. Izzo, how you doing tonight?
Man, we're dragging, man. We're dragging. It's a long way to October, Jay. So, you know, it's going to be a long couple months here. So, it's, you know, we just had the draft this past weekend. We had a couple big trades in that first round that happened. But first, we're going to start off. We had two legends kind of call it quits today, call it a career. First one, since I'm a goaltender by trade, Roberto Luongo announces his retirement after 19 seasons in the NHL. He is the third winningest goaltender in NHL history. You know, he's 4 years old, 489 wins, I think 392 losses under his belt. You know, he's over 90% on the save percentage, which is pretty good for a 19-year career. You know, spending all of his time, well, drafted by the Islanders. Mike, I know you're listening, and I know you remember that trade to the Florida Panthers. And then back to the Florida Panthers, he went to the Canucks, and then back to the Panthers. So, you know, stellar career. You know, he's been to the Cup Finals before. Unfortunately, didn't really work out for Vancouver that year, where they lost to Boston and Big Z and everything like that. I don't know if you remember that series a few years ago.
Yeah, that was the year that Vancouver lit itself on fire because they lost.
Yeah, which is, you know, which is kind of crazy because I remember Ryan Kessler and everybody that was on that Vancouver team, even the Sedin twins were tweeting out, please stop burning our city down. So, you know, it was a high power offense that he was a part of up there in Vancouver. You know, certainly didn't really work out too well for him, but, you know, coming down later down the ladder in his career when he went back to Florida, injuries kind of started playing a problem on him, you know, every season. So, you know, it sucks being a goaltender because once you start losing the hips and the legs, man, it's all downhill from there. So, you know,
you got to think, too, he lost a lot of good years playing in front or behind some bad defenses with the Islanders originally in that first run with Florida. You know, they had some – I mean, the Islanders, when he started out, they were the Islanders that – you know, I grew up remembering with the fish stick guy on the logo for those few years, and it just wasn't a well-run team. But, I mean, they, you know, Florida had a couple good offensive years, but those defenses he played behind were just not good. And he still managed, like, the guy, I always appreciated Roberto Luongo. The guy was staying on his head to try and make a save, and he just did it quietly. And I hate seeing guys like him who are those consummate professionals who injuries just catch up to him and, you know, he knows he can't do it anymore. So I'm glad he got to go out on his terms.
Yeah, it's definitely one way you always want to go out. You know, he is, like I said, third winningest goaltender behind Patrick Roy and Marty Brodeur. So because Marty Brodeur is at 691, Patrick Roy at 551 and wins. So, you know, that's not bad, you know, not bad company. You know, he is ninth in shutouts for his career. you know, he's won gold medals with Canada in 2010 and 2014 at the Olympics, if I remember correctly. I do believe he was on both of those teams. You know, playoffs were a kind of different story. Like you said, he did have a lot of weak defense and everything. So, you know, still happy to see him, you know, kind of go out on his own terms. And me being a goaltender by trade and everything like that, you know, is pretty cool. But the other big name, which is a name I'm kind of familiar with, is defenseman Brooks Orpik announced his retirement today. 15-year career spent with the Capitals and the Pittsburgh Penguins, where I watched him pretty much grow up to be a crazy defenseman that he was. He was part of that Generation X draft kind of movement when Pittsburgh was on the rebound and on the verge of being sold. But, you know, 15 seasons, over 1,000 career games. Really wasn't a point-producing guy. Just liked to lay the lumber down and just pretty much make teams pay in the corners and all along the boards. Anybody that remembers the what they call in shift in the 2000, I think it was the 2008-2009 Stanley Cup Final, where he laid out for Detroit Red Wings in like 9 seconds in the Penguins zone and everything. He got the crowd into it down in Pittsburgh. So this is a guy I grew up watching even before I even left high school. So he's a Boston College product, played really good hockey there, came to Pittsburgh and really kind of fit into that defensive mentality that Pittsburgh has.
Yeah, I mean, when he got, because I remember those teams, you know, that's when Mario was essentially saved, you know, hockey in Pittsburgh by buying the controlling interest. And they just started drafting these guys. And, you know, Brooks Orpik, you know, he essentially was the protector of Crosby's first, what, 2 or 3 seasons. And he was one of those glue guys, too, that just, he was a good teammate. Guys loved playing with him. And, yeah, he might not have put up, you know, like Phil Housley or Paul Coffey kind of numbers at, you know, playing defense. But, I mean, I always loved watching him play, and I was heartbroken when he ended up playing in Washington. It just, you know, being a Pens fan, you know, Washington was just one of those, you know, that was the team that you hated.
And, yeah, you know, you're not far off on that one, man. The old Washington, I know Washington Cap. I have a bunch of Washington Capitals fans that I've played hockey with over the years growing up. And, you know, you mentioned the Penguins or even the Rangers. So they just get instant PTSD, you know, PTSD and just kind of shrivel up and just kind of go into a ball, you know, because those were the two teams that, you know, Washington had a problem with. But, you know, he's a 2-time Stanley Cup winner, won the Cup with the Pens in 09, and then won the most recent, you know, Cup with Washington before this past season. You know, so always a class act guy, you know, very kept himself a lot, wasn't really an off-ice kind of troublemaker or anything. Was really strict on his diet, but just – you know, just kind of growing up and hearing the lore and everything, when he first was drafted, I guess he would have 9 Red Bulls before a game, which I'm amazed that he didn't have a heart attack. So,
oh my God.
9 Red Bulls before a game, man, that's ridiculous. But that's why he always had the crazy eyes, apparently, which was always funny to me. So, you know, congratulations to Brooke Orpik. I'm glad he's got a cup. You know, he was on a lot of bad teams in Pittsburgh for a lot of years before, you know, the likes of Sid and Gino and Letang came around. You know, he was there. He came in with Marc-Andre Fleury. So those two were, you know, definitely some of the two key foundations for that team to really kind of become what it was and what it has been in, you know, the last 4 or 5 seasons. So, you know, congratulations to Brooks Orpik. I'm glad for him. So, but moving on, we did have the draft and we did have some trades that actually – kind of took place during that first day of the draft. But the one that really got me, the biggest one, or the biggest one of all, I would have to say, has to be the PK Subban trade to the New Jersey Devils for a couple younger defensemen. It was really interesting to see that, especially with the Devils having the number 1 overall pick and ended up taking up Jack Hughes, the number 1 overall rated skater in the draft standings, apparently. So now they're trying to focus on getting Taylor Hall to stay there. You know, they seem to have a pretty good team, but I think the big issue for me right now is goaltending. You can have all the star defenseman power that you have and even the greatest offensive player in the world, but if you don't have that goaltending, it's not going to really get you anywhere. In New Jersey, they know something about good goaltending because Marty Brodeur spent a whole hell of a lot of time there and brought them, you know, a few Stanley Cup championships, and it's just he set the bar pretty high for New Jersey to try and fill in that that goaltender spot.
Well, Izzo, what do you think that trade's supposed to signify, though? Because when you have the first overall pick, you know, you didn't do too hot in the seasons leading up to it. There's a reason you've got the number one overall pick, you know, especially in the NHL. You know, he's a skilled defenseman. You know, he's a big dude. He can get you points when he needs to. But, like, what is this long-term for the Devils?
Long-term for the Devils, I mean, Subban's, I think, only 28, 29 years old, you know, so he's still on the up and up. And typically defensemen like him can play for a very, you know, pretty good length of time. You know, I still think he's in his prime right now. You know, Nashville is pressed up against the cap. You know, he's got a $9 million cap hit right now. So it made sense for the Devils. They have the cap space. They still have the cap space to go after another big name and even possibly try and get Taylor Hall on a long-term deal to stay there in New Jersey. You know, so this really kind of bumps up the the blue line, definitely, you know, because he's going to eat minutes up on that power play. He's going to eat minutes up 5-on-5, and he's even going to probably get on some of that penalty kill, too. So, because not only is he an offensive defenseman, but he can lay the lumber down, too. He's not afraid to throw the body around. I'm really looking forward to seeing what he's going to do in the community. You know, Subban's a very big community guy. Still does work up in Montreal, still does work in Nashville too. So, you know, he might not be too well liked on the ice, but he's certainly adored off the ice. And I think this is a good move for New Jersey to try and, you know, you already got Jack Hughes. You got Taylor Hall. Ray Shiro, who's been a GM for a long time, has got a Stanley Cup. Was responsible for that 2009 Pittsburgh Penguin team. So, you know, all the Pens fans who are listening, they know how that one worked out. But, you know, this was one of the bigger ones that I saw. The other big one was what's going on up in Toronto and our Carolina Hurricanes. The Carolina Hurricanes acquired Patrick Marleau along with a first conditional first round pick, excuse me, and a seventh round pick in the 2020 draft next year. Maple Leafs ended up getting a sixth round pick in the 2020 draft. So there's a lot of things going on up in Toronto right now, especially with Mitch Marner, who's the local boy from Toronto, has led the team in the last 2 years of scoring. He wants Austin Matthews money, and it's kind of hard to say no to that, especially since he's led your team in points the last two seasons. So, you know, Marleau still had like a $5 million cap hit. You know, Carolina has the space right now, and, you know, he might stick. There's a chance he might stick around in Carolina. I don't really kind of see it. I think he's going to go back to San Jose and finish off in San Jose, which I don't think is the smart move for San Jose because their team is old enough. You know, one more player like that age, you're going to start collecting Social Security and everything like that. So,
San Jose is one of those teams that just seems – you know, they get one or two good young players. They surround them with a lot of the older vets, and then they waste years of those young players' primes by, you know, essentially having one of the best records in the West and getting smoked in the first round of the playoffs. That seems like it's San Jose's MO at this point.
Yeah, and I mean, you still have Joe Thornton, who's apparently going to try and come back for another season. You know, Joe Pavelski has been rumored to be on the move right now, too, as well. You know, he's at 31 years old. He's been there for, you know, in San Jose for quite some time right now, so he might be on the move. You know, you still have Evander Kane and Thomas Hertl and, you know, all these guys, but you know, you got Brent Burns, you got Eric Carlson, you know, you got a stacked defense. You know, it's just time to, I think it's time to move on from Jumbo Joe. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong, he is probably one of the greatest purest passers I've ever seen in the game, next to Igor Larionov from those, actually, who played with San Jose for a while before he went to Detroit and did all that work up in Detroit. So, you know, one of the best passers and playmakers I've ever seen play. You know, if only he would have stayed in Boston, God knows what he would have done in Boston too. But, you know, you're getting up there in age. You know, Martin Jones is not getting any younger either. You know, he spent a lot of time behind Jonathan Quick in L.A. during their cup runs, you know, back in the early 2012 season and the 2014 or something like that. I can't remember. It's been so long. But, you know, it's San Jose, I think their window's almost shut. You know, I mean, they've been getting rid of, you know, draft picks and everything, trying to sign some and veteran guys, but I think they're just kind of going at it, you know, the wrong way. But speaking of our Carolina Hurricanes, they made a big trade with none other than the Chicago Blackhawks, like they've been doing for the last couple seasons. The Blackhawks are going to acquire defenseman Calvin DeHaan and Alexei Sarella, for goaltender Anton Forsberg and defenseman Gustav Forsling. So this is a backup goaltender and a bottom six defenseman that the Chicago Blackhawks are giving up. Calvin DeHaan is probably going to be a good fit for the Blackhawks, almost kind of like a good true defenseman, you know, something with a sorely need right now, you know, because Duncan Keith and Brent, I can't remember his name because I'm not even a Blackhawks fan, but Brent Seabrook, I'm sorry, that's his name, are getting up there in age now, you know, so it's been a while. Chicago's got some issues right now, especially in the goaltender spot with what to do with Crawford since, you know, he's, you know, that them head injuries are kind of playing on him. You know, I know he's got you a cup and everything, but you got to kind of, you know, keep a solid backup around just in case and everything. And I really like the way Forsberg played for them when he had his moments to shine and everything. He played very well, a very big goaltender too. So, you know, I think this kind of works out for Carolina. So not only do you have Peter Mrazek, but you're also going to have Anton Forsberg. So, you know, this is just another pretty much the Carolina Blackhawks are trying to make a run again, you know. So I was thoroughly impressed with what the Hurricanes did with what they had as a roster last year. So, I mean, I just hope they keep Falk in the lineup. That's a big piece of the puzzle and everything for the Carolina Hurricanes. So that was another trade that really caught me by surprise too.
Yeah, I mean, Carolina kind of, I mean, the last two seasons, you saw a lot of progression, but they also had a big issue with kind of like what the Sharks need to be doing, getting rid of and cutting some of those older players out, you know, like Stahl. What was the goalie's name that they just stuck with forever?
Cam Ward.
Cam Ward, yes, thank you. You know, it just was like, man, you know, I get it. You know, these are some of the guys that have been here through all the growing pains down in Raleigh. But you just got to know when to walk away. And, you know, watching him play a couple games this past season, you know, you really saw a lot of those younger players stepping up. And there was a lot of growth there. So, I mean, Carolina, the Hurricanes right now, they're at a tipping point, honestly. You know, they need to really, really play much better hockey and not go 10 years in between, you know, playoff appearances to keep a good, strong fan base, man. I mean, you and I both know that as far as fan bases go, you really can't beat the Whalers. I mean, there's still Whalers fans now that come down from Connecticut, you know, to watch the Hurricanes. And they showed with the throwback unis this year. You know, the Hurricanes and Tom Dundon, who for other reasons isn't one of my favorite people in the world, but, you know, he's got to spend money and do the things Karmanos wasn't doing when he had the team, which is, you know, keeping a good product out on the ice and give fans a reason to get out to the arena every game, you know, every home game and keep that energy, you know, that fan base energized.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, no matter what, they're always going to be the Hartford Whalers to me. I mean, don't get me wrong, like, I can remember I was so thrilled when Ron Francis came from Hartford over to Pittsburgh and did all the amazing things that he did. And then even to go back, you know, to Carolina, you know, and captain that team when they first were moved there and everything, you know, and then working his way up into the front office and everything and, you know, held a bunch of positions. And, you know, that I think that 2006 Stanley Cup that they got, you know, Cam Ward was a first year or a second year player, ended up winning the Conn Smythe that year just because he played so well. And, you know, they made the Eastern Conference Finals, I think, one or two more times with him in net. And then, you know, it just kind of did sputter out and everything, you know. But, you know, if you look at that 2016, I mean, you still had a Rod Brendamore on that team, you know, a young Eric Staal on that team. You know, there's a lot of good veteran players. I would say the right veteran players that were on that team that really kind of made it, you know, what it was and everything for that 2006 year. So, you know, they're trying to build a team. I just would like to see them really kind of keep stockpiling that farm system, you know. So, I mean, if you look, the Charlotte Checkers won the AHL championship there down in I think they did that up in Chicago against the Wolves on the road. So, you know, the Charlotte Checkers got a great system going on right now. So, you know, there's talent there. I think they just have to keep it stockpiled. And, you know, if you can keep a guy like Justin Williams around for another year or two, I think he can really instill a lot of wisdom on some of these guys. And even if you look at Jordan Staal, who's won a cup before with that 2009 Pittsburgh team, you know, he's been there. He knows what it's like. You know, he's been to two cup finals in his career. So, you know, it's very key for Carolina, like you said, to really kind of spend the money. But last thing we're going to touch on real quick is we've had the Hockey Hall of Fame class of 2019 be announced. First guy, Guy Carboneau, who's a guy I really admire, really adore, won the Stanley Cup three times in a 19-year career. Haley Wickenheiser, who was a four-time Olympic gold medalist with Canada for the women's team, and actually I think was their captain a few times for a couple of those teams, were among some of the players that were selected to the 2019 Hall of Fame class. Also, Sergei Zubov, who played 16 seasons in the NHL, and Vaclav Nemanski, who played six NHL seasons and was a mainstay for the Czech team, the Czechoslovakian national team before the two countries split. Guy I'm really familiar with too, general manager Jim Rutherford, who's with the Penguins right now and who was a former Penguin goaltender, is going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame as a builder. And Boston College coach Jerry York was also selected as a builder. These guys are going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame on November 18th. This is always something that's on NHL Network, so as we get closer, I will keep people informed about that. But Guy Carboneau played for a couple teams, Montreal, St. Louis, and Dallas. Actually won two cups with Montreal and then was part of that 1999 Dallas Stars no-goal game, I'm sorry, because I'm a big Dominic Hasek fan, and that guy got screwed. But 663 points, 260 goals, 403 assists in over 1,300 games. That's pretty good by my standards. I don't know about anybody else. But Selke Trophy winner in 88, 89, 92. And he was a former center and a captain for the Canadiens. Like I said, won the cup twice with them in 86 and 93, the 99 Dallas team. So, I can remember this guy playing quite a bit, especially when they came into Pittsburgh. Guy Carboneau was always a guy I was really worried about. I don't know if you ever got a chance to watch Guy play and everything like that there, sir.
No, I didn't. The name that really stuck out that you threw out was Sergei Zubov. I mean, you remember when he I can't remember who he came over from, but when he landed in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, he did spend some time with Pittsburgh. I want to say, I think he came from the Rangers. He either came from the Rangers or the Dallas Stars. I think it was the Dallas Stars, if I remember correctly. But yeah, he's he was one of the one of the better two-way defenseman kind of players that I remember growing up with. You know, 771 points in his career, 152 goals, 619 assists, in just over 1,000 games. You know, like I say, played with the Rangers, Stars, and the Penguins. You know, had 117 points in 164 playoff games, 24 goals and 93 assists. And you know what's crazy is he never won in any kind of individual award at any point in time during his career. You know, he starred pretty he played pretty well for the former Soviet states when he was a younger kid and everything like that. So, you know, that's probably one of my more favorite defensemen. I always wanted a defenseman like him in front of me. He always showed up in the playoffs, no matter what the stage. So, he did win the Cup twice, once with the Rangers in 94 and with the Stars in 99, and also won a gold medal at the Albertville Olympics with the Soviet Union back in 92. So, you know, this is a guy that's done it all. You know, he's had a pretty great career. So it's pretty cool to see Sergei Zubov, especially a guy who was a former Penguin, to hit that Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the dude. He wore 56, and I believe his first year is when they had those horrible alternate jerseys where it had like the flying penguin with the gray streak.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, I hated those things.
Yes, I think everybody in Pittsburgh really hated those jerseys. You know, that's probably one of the worst ones. But I, you know, there was a lot of bad jerseys. That's actually during the years when they had the fishermen. You know, on the Islanders jerseys. So, you know, I know Mr. Perricone remembers that, sir. If you're tuning in tonight, you know, we've talked many a nights about those ugly fisherman jerseys. So, you know, hey, it's pretty cool to see the next Hall of Fame class get introduced. We got some big names that are going to be coming up for next year. You know, one of the biggest ones that I saw off gate was Jerome McGinley. And Jerome McGinley is, you know, one of the greatest players that ever played this game. Captain of the Calgary Flames for a lot of years. So, won some gold medals. Got to the Cup final. Unfortunately, it didn't work out for him too well. Where Tampa Bay and that Stack team really kind of took control in that Game 7 and really kind of blew it up. So,
yeah.
But. That's what we got going on right now. I know there's going to be some rule changes that are going to be coming out next week or sometime this week, so we're going to kind of discuss that next week. I'm also going to kind of go over some more trades that we're going to be having going on. Free agency is going to hit July 1st, so we've got a lot of big names, not only in the unrestricted free agent market, but also in the restricted free agent market. You know, so hopefully Mr. Perricone Anders Lee stays in the Long Island. I think the Islanders desperately need him. That's one I'm going to be really paying attention to quite closely. We're going to see what Lou Lamoriello does with him. We just got a lot of big names out there right now. Jay, if you're listening, Artemi Panarin, Matt Duchene, even Sergei Bobrovsky. These are three key pieces that make Columbus who they are right now, and I think they have to keep at least two of them to even try and repeat what they did last season. So it's going to be interesting to see in the next couple of weeks. So we're going to be covering it as the summer rolls along until we get to October.
I definitely want to thank Mike for hanging out. From a sports fan aspect, I definitely enjoyed listening to you guys, and that's kind of what we needed for this NHL segment. Like I said, I tried my hardest to participate and be his co-pilot, but that's what we needed tonight, Mike. So anytime that you're available with the NHL segment, feel free to jump in here and save me. But I want to thank both of y'all tonight. It was definitely a very enjoyable show throughout the whole night. Mike, I definitely will catch up with you after the show, and we'll talk about getting you back on here. Izzo, as always, a pleasure and honor, and enjoy you being part of this, and we'll talk about whether Tuesday night or Wednesday night next week is As a matter of fact, it's going to have to be Tuesday because I will be in Ohio. I will have this time next week. I will be at Kings Island, so it's not happening next week on Wednesday. It's going to happen Tuesday night. We'll get that all squared away. But thank both of you guys, and I'll catch up with both of y'all after the show.
All right, Jason, take it easy, man.
Yeah, Jay, not a problem, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
Yes, sir. Want to make sure that I thank Carolina Sports Plus, Fit for Life. Without these great marketing partners, we wouldn't be able to do what we do. Follow us on Twitter at 110 Nation. Follow us, like us on Facebook, 110 Nation Sports. Make sure you guys jump over to the site, www.110nationsports.com. Catch up on all the latest going on. If you guys enjoyed what you guys heard tonight, you can only imagine the things that they're writing and putting on the site. So make sure you guys get over there. Check it out tomorrow night, 8 o'clock. Great Chat Live, Chris and Craig. Chris and Craig. That's all right the first time. Make sure you guys tune in. Until then.
Thanks for listening to the 110 Nation Sports Show with Mr. CJ Sports. You are a part of the 110 Nation, so be sure to visit the 110nation.com for everything related to the show. You can follow CJ on Twitter at 110 Nation and on Facebook at 110 Nation Sports. Until next time.